Joy, the latest from director David O. Russell and his merry troupe of traveling actors, including Jennifer Lawrence, Bradley Cooper, and Robert De Niro, is loosely based on the real-life story of inventor Joy Mangano. The film centers around Joy's first invention, the Miracle Mop, which is a cotton self-ringing mop that was sold with some ubiquity on the Home Shopping Network in the 1990s. You'd be forgiven for not realizing that Joy is mostly about a mop, though. The trailers avoid any mention of the word and pitch the film as a wacky, zany family comedy. I think the film desperately wants to be the movie that it is in the trailers, which is strange given how much of the film is dominated by the intricacies of mop creation, patent law, and product distribution. There are several other problems with the film besides its uneven tone and subject matter. Jennifer Lawrence, perhaps the most in-demand movie star on the planet at present, is terribly miscast. She's supposed to be a tired, worn-down, divorced single mother who suffered a few bad breaks. Lawrence seems less like a harried single mother and more like the high school-age babysitter. David O. Russell's interest in the three main actors, namely Lawrence, De Niro, and Cooper, make this feel like the third production at a summer stock playhouse, in which all the main roles are occupied by the same people. There's an odd frame story that proclaims this movie to be about four generations of women, but we learn very little about Joy's grandmother, aside from her love and belief in Joy. We see slightly more of Joy's mother, but she's constructed as an impediment to Joy's success. The film does offer an odd portrait of two long-derided forms of daytime television, soap operas and home shopping networks. Joy's mother spends most of her time holed up in her room, which consists of little more than a bed and a television. She's reluctant to leave the space of her bed, fretting when a plumber must come to fix the pipes, and spends a majority of her time watching soap operas. In this way, the film seems to want to use the soap opera as a symptom of her mother's anxieties. Her inability to connect with the world around her is linked to an unhealthy obsession with the television program, mentioning character names as though they are real people. This is a fairly classic reading of the perils of soap opera enjoyment dating back to the 1940s. As Danielle Blumenthal summarizes, the early tradition of mass media effects literature thought soap operas addled the brain of those watching. Quote, the researchers took for granted the notion that soaps had an objective content that the passive viewer, which they were qualified, of course, to measure. But the movie also, if inadvertently, complicates that fairly simplistic reading of the pleasure offered by soap operas. The movie opens not on Joy, but on the characters in her mother's favorite soap opera, which provides one way of reading the disjointed events that follow. Soap operas, after all, are not known for their beginnings and conclusions. As Tanya Modaleski argues, if, as Aristotle so reasonably claimed, drama is the imitation of a human action that has a beginning, a middle, and an end, soap opera belongs to a separate genius that is entirely composed of an indefinitely expandable middle. The importance of this difference between classical drama and soaps cannot be stressed enough. It is not only that successful soap operas do not end, it is also that they cannot end. Beginning with the soap opera could have been an indication that the movie was interested in exploring a messy middle, but then the narrative switches to an omniscient flashback frame narrative from the grandmother's point of view, trading the messy middle for the solid visions of success. But the film uses the soap opera frame one more time. When Joy falls asleep, she has a nightmare in which she is trapped in the world of the soap opera. This artful allegorization makes the soap opera the language of dreams. This is a lovely thought, given that dreams are not guided by the rules of narrative action, and they are often made of the stuff from the expandable, messy middle. But it is the fledgling Home Shopping Network that proves to be Joy's true salvation. At first, the HSN attempts to have one of their established on-air personalities sell the mop. But the man is underprepared. He doesn't know anything about the mop or how to work it, which leads to dismal sales. Joy is the one who needs to sell it, standing in the fake kitchen set, talking about the work of mopping floors to the women who know what such work is like. Thus, the movie exposes the intimacy of television, that which makes it so different from classical film. We experience television in our homes, our own private retreat from the world. The shopping networks especially are built on the premise of talking directly to the viewer, of making the viewer feel like an old friend. While the soap operas are pathologized, the intimacy of the Home Shopping Network is just the ticket, allowing Joy to sell the mop she wasn't able to hawk in the Kmart parking lots. And the movie comes alive as we watch Joy sell the mops to millions of homes. The rest of the movie lacks that kind of intimacy, and I wish it had focused more on the small moments of daytime TV.